Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. This is a session that in which we're going to discuss a little bit our results and challenges around adoption. The general comment I want to make is that in the last year we've been trying to implement a strategy review in which the objective of expanding adoption efforts around the world has been very important and key. And what I found as a challenge from my perspective in the operational side is we are, as you know, we have limited resources, and whatever internal research capabilities we have, we tend to basically tunnel them into the standard setting process, which is our main work. But we have a lot of strategic work around adoption, and our strategic work needs a lot of support on the information side. A lot of countries that are considering or are struggling with adoption come to us asking a lot of information about what other countries do, how we deal with or what information we can provide them with addressing certain challenges around, for example, costs of adoption, and a lot of information about what does the academic research says about adoption benefits, which is a huge consideration for countries when they come and do efforts internally to convince governments and decision makers to make actually the decision. So we've been trying to deal with that in a very cost-effective way, and trying to build on some external work done outside of the foundation, and in some cases putting our own resources to fund those studies. For example, last year many of you perhaps have looked at the final staff report published by the SEC and the foundation's response. It had an appendix on we did a review of the recent academic research on adoption and its benefits, and today we want to present to you some of the products of this continuous work on how to support our adoption, our strategic work to support adoption, with two initiatives that we started. One, which I was very happy Paul Pachter has agreed to lead on the technical side, and it's the jurisdictions profiles. We struggled with how to present that information, and I think together with Paul and the team that supported the survey, we came up with a result that is, you can judge it, and we of course want to know what are your comments, but we're quite happy with the amount of work that and information that needed to be covered. I think we ended up with a very good result. And the other is the study on costs of transition to IFRS in Canada. This is an initiative I initiated with the Canadian board, and I think also it's work in process. It's still not, we don't have the final study yet, but I hope Karen can share with us some of the insights she had in both participating in answering the survey and participating in the roundtable. And I'm just in the process of looking at the final draft of that study, and I think it's very informative and very useful for our strategic purposes. It's not perfect, of course, and you will share with us what are the reservations people had, but I think it's in the right direction and supporting our cause. And finally, and this is another very, very effective document that we're using in our efforts, is the summary from Korea, which will be presented to you. It was presented at the trustees session and followed by a very good and very useful discussion, and I hope the same will happen here today. So these are the opening remarks.
Thanks, Yael. We turn it over to Paul.
Where are you? Oh, there. I'm over here in the corner here. Thank you. In their strategy report that the trustees published last February, they reaffirmed support for a single global set of accounting standards, and in fact took what I think is a very courageous decision and statement in that report that the only way to achieve that is adoption, not convergence. And the trustees recognize that in the short term, some jurisdictions, for various reasons, may have to keep a national gap and converge it with IFRS, but the ultimate way to achieve a single set of standards is through adoption. And the trustees said, well, we need to have a detailed assessment of exactly where the different jurisdictions stand on the path toward the objective of adoption. And the staff of the IFRS Foundation last autumn, did a survey, an online survey, and invited responses from different jurisdictions. Any jurisdiction could respond on different issues so we could assess progress toward adoption. After I left the board in the end of December, I took over the project of putting the jurisdictional profiles together. Just last week, we posted the first 66 of these. The link is on this slide here. There's also a link, a permanent link, right on the homepage of the IFRS Foundation IASB website. It's important to notice that the profiles were prepared by the foundation. Countries responded to the survey, but we reviewed and vetted that information. I prepared the profile. It was then reviewed not only by the survey respondent, but all of the large international accounting firms and also various securities regulators. And the goal, as stated here, provide a central source of information of where the different jurisdictions stand. On this slide, you'll see the list of the 66 jurisdictions for which we've already posted profiles. This was kind of a self-selected group of 66. It's not necessarily random, and so you can't quite say it's representative of the whole world. But as you'll see in a minute, by the where are we now? In June, 6 months from now, I think we will have maybe 120 profiles on our website, maybe more, and I think that will clearly be representative of the world. I think this is as well. Each profile has the same structure. We have details about the survey participant. Did they commit? Are they committed? Have they made a public statement committing to global accounting standards and to IFRS as those standards? We ask, what is the extent of IFRS application in your jurisdiction? Which companies? Is it listed only? In some jurisdictions, it's all listed except banks. Is it also unlisted? Is it required or permitted? Consolidated financial statements only, separate financial statements as well, etc. We ask, what is the endorsement process? Who is the legal authority that has adopted IFRS is in your jurisdiction? What does the auditor's report say? To us, it's very telling if the auditor's report says in conformity with international financial reporting standards, full stop. It's pretty clear that that jurisdiction has adopted IFRS. If it says something else, we have to do more investigation. Like if it says X jurisdiction financial reporting standards, we then have to decide, is that IFRS or is it not? We ask whether they eliminated any of the options that are in IFRSs, and even, I'd say worse, did you make any modifications to IFRSs? We also ask about the process for translation. Our foundation has a very comprehensive program to do the translation or assist jurisdictions in doing the translation and ensuring that it's an accurate translation of the standard. And so we wanted to be sure whether jurisdictions were participating in our process or are they off doing something on their own. And finally, we had some questions about adoption of the IFRS for SMEs. As Yale said, I think the results are very comforting to us because I think there's been a lot of misinformation floating around the world that jurisdictions make modifications in most cases before they adopt. It's only required for some companies. Lots of uncertainty that I think we've cleared up with the findings of this survey, which, as I said, have been reviewed by international audit firms and regulators. First, we said, has your jurisdiction made a public commitment to a single set of global accounting standards? Out of the 66 jurisdictions for which we posted profiles, 63 said yes. Have you committed to IFRS's as the global standard? 65 jurisdictions responded yes. Where are you on your journey toward adoption? Well, out of the 66 jurisdictions, 55 have adopted as far as we are concerned after our reviews. Now, we had to make a definition of what do we mean by adopt. Everyone in this room is familiar with the European Union carve-out out of IAS 39. They've got 8,000 listed companies in Europe. Fewer than 20 take advantage of that carve-out. So 7,980, I guess, are using full IFRS as adopted by the IASB. So sure, I put them in the 55 countries are in that group of adopters, because there's virtually just a handful of those that took advantage of the carve-out. So we had to make some decision about who is and who is not an adopter. So we have 55 yes, finished the journey, or virtually finished, 11 no. Who are the 11? Japan. But, you know, as was pointed out earlier today, Japan already permits IFRS for domestic companies. This year, there's, I think, 17 who use IFRS. These are the very large companies, and the expectation is from their own industry group that 50 or more will use it in the next year's fiscal year. They all end in March. So, and that will be 20% of the total market cap in Japan, even though it's not fully adopted. The U.S., as I think Michelle pointed out this morning, we've got 450 users of full IFRSs in the United States, and the market cap of just those companies, they're foreign companies but registered in the U.S., the market cap is bigger than most European stock exchanges where everybody uses IFRS. So there's a lot of use of IFRS in the U.S. China, their standards are substantially converged. India, we learned in this survey that the Securities Commission actually permits IFRS on a voluntary basis. Now, they have more stock exchanges in India than any other country in the world and more listed companies. They only got 11 who are using IFRS at the moment. It's some big companies, but it's still just a drop in the bucket. But on the other hand, the door is open, and that's good. Pakistan, Singapore have adopted many, but not all IFRSs. Someone mentioned Saudi Arabia this morning. It's already required by the bank regulator for banks and insurance companies, and they have a plan for full adoption for all other listed companies and also for the IFRS for SMEs, I think by 2015. I forget, or 2016, one of those. Bhutan and Bolivia, among our respondents, I said yet to adopt, but some companies are just using it. Actually, since I prepared the report for the Advisory Council, Bhutan has now adopted. They already adopted 15 standards, and they have a specific date certain when they're going to adopt the rest. That only leaves, out of our 66 countries, Indonesia and Macau. They've adopted some IFRSs, but they have not announced a plan for full adoption. Modifications are rare. The people who say, oh, every country has their own flavor of IFRS, they're just wrong. As I mentioned, the European Union, virtually every company is using full IFRS as issued by the IASB. Yes, a few jurisdictions deferred the effective dates of some of our standards, particularly IFRS's 9, 10, although 9 hasn't gone into effect yet, 10, 11, 12, but that's only for a year or two. Almost every other modification that a jurisdiction made was in anticipation of work currently being done by the IASB. It doesn't mean they're going to get the answer they like from the IASB, but at least they know the IASB is examining issues like equity method in separate financial statements to account for investments in subs and joint ventures, bearer plants in agriculture, loan loss provisioning. Some countries have already adopted an expected loss model, which we're moving toward, rate regulation, hedge accounting. So of the 55 who have adopted, 50 require IFRS for every listed company. The other 5 require it for all listed except banks. In those countries, the securities regulator does not regulate the bank listings, and so they've adopted, the bank regulator has adopted something else. Is it permitted for non-public companies? 60% of those 55, it's permitted for the non-public. IFRS for SMEs, more than half of those jurisdictions have already adopted it or are actively considering it, and that's a particularly low number because a large percent of the original 66 surveyed are from Europe, and as of yet, Europe hasn't adopted, so European countries haven't. So where do we go from here? We've got 15 remaining EU and EEA countries. They're all IFRS adopters, so we're going to move those 15 profiles forward as a matter of urgency, and I think we can get them done by end of July. They've already been written, and they're about to go out for review. Then I went to the IFAC website, and I made a list of every country that is an IFAC member or a member of one of the IFAC-recognized regional bodies. I subtracted out the 66 we've already posted and the 15 more EU-EEA, which we'll have done very shortly. And you know how many more countries are left? 74. So I've got, in addition to the 66 now posted, we've got 15 EU-EEA and 74 others. My goal on those 74 is to have the whole thing done by December 31st. It's a big project, and I think it is not going to go as easily as the first 66 because that was self-selecting, and the people who are proud of their history and willing to say we've adopted IFRS, well, they're the ones who responded to us. Now we're going to have to slug it out with some who say, oh, yes, we've adopted, but you know, I'm not sure they really have in full. So we will finish 89 more profiles by the end of the year. That's the goal. I don't think we'll get them all done, but that's why I said to you maybe 120, 130 by year end. We've already realized that there's some important questions we didn't ask. Things, for example, do you allow early adoption or do you prohibit? It's a good number of countries don't, even though the IASB may permit early adoption, they don't. So, and there's some other things. These are decisions that countries make that affect comparability across borders. And it's important for us to know that. So we've got 3 or 4 questions already. Plus, of course, the data gets a little bit out of date. We want to make sure nothing has changed. So we will do a survey before the end of this year of everybody who's posted. We will come back to this council here in October, at your October meeting, with proposals for the follow-up survey and get your thoughts on that. So now I'm finished and we can have some discussion. I don't know if you remember, I think it was October 2010. Anyway, about less than 2 years ago, the council actually talked about doing a study of this type. And so my question to you is this kind of what you had in mind has it turned out as you expected, or if not, what can we do different or better? Secondly, a proposal has been made internally within our organization that we should publish in print an annual bound volume of the findings, perhaps with some value-added information, maybe like a big table, other, I don't know what else. And so I thought, what are your thoughts on the marketability of and the usefulness, really, of a bound volume of these? And any other comments you might have on the profiles as well. So let me turn it back to the chairman now. That's my introduction to our surveys.
Thanks, Paul. Christoph.
First of all, Paul, this is very, very impressive. And my personal view is this is goes even beyond of what I thought we had requested when we made that request. I think it will be very useful for both supporting the notion of a global standard and understanding where issues are in the world that the ISB or the foundation should tackle. One minor question would be, I read that about the auditor's report, what it refers to with regard to conformity. Have you asked a question on whether in those countries that do not refer to compliance with IFRS, whether that could be done in addition? I know a lot of European companies, actually, they have to, the auditor's report has to state that it's in compliance with IFRS as adopted by the EU, but oftentimes it says, and in addition, although with full IFRS. And I think it would be interesting whether a country allows that additional one or not, because that tells you something about the attitude towards full IFRS.
That question was asked and is tabulated in our profiles, but what I don't have, Christoph, is how many companies are actually doing it. But we said, is dual report, we call that dual reporting, is dual reporting permitted and done in your country? And they've said yes. Usually, I mean, obviously it's optional. Or usually it's optional. Some countries actually it's not even optional. I mean, like Australia, I think they report in conformity with Australian financial reporting standards and IFRS. But most countries it's optional. But we did not ask if it's optional. Are most companies doing it? A few? It might be something for us to ask in the follow-up.
Makoto, did you?
Thank you, Paul. And first of all, congratulations for the publishing of this profile project. And this is a very helpful and informative. And I have a general request to the profile project. I think that this profile project survey is very informative, as I mentioned. And I think that it's very important to have a periodical update of this profile project because as you know, that in Japan, now the 20 domestic companies are now using or publicly announced to use IFRS on a voluntary basis, and it says that 60 companies will use IFRS within few years. And also, we are now discussing to take additional steps to enhance the application of IFRS by relaxing the condition of the IFRS application. So this means that in Japan, now it is stated that IFRS permitted or limited voluntary basis, but maybe the Japan will move to the another category like just a voluntary application of IFRS. So I think that the periodical maintenance and update of this profile project will be beneficial for the Advisory Council and all IFRS stakeholders.
Thank you. We definitely will update, have a formal process for updating once a year. It will start late this year for the formal process. But we also have created a special email address, ifrsapplication@ifrs.org. It's on our website. It's in each profile. And it says right at the front, if anything has changed in your jurisdiction, send an email to that email address I just mentioned. I monitor that every day. So far, I've gotten two emails in that email address, but business will pick up. But anyway, so we have a process for updating. I mean, it's only been out 4 days, so there can't be too many changes. What I did hear from was people said, well, you didn't quite say it correctly here, or somebody, the contact person's name changed, that kind of thing. But we, these are not permanent. They're not permanent. If something has changed, we want to have the latest information on our website.
Fumio.
Yes, thank you. Also, in the Japan case, you mentioned that the 17 companies already started the IFRS, and the other 50 companies now planned. These are all consolidated base. And if this is, you say, the 20% of market cap, but according to the Nippon Keizai and the investigation, if Japanese companies, top 200 or to 300 company, leading company introduce the IFRS, that's up to 60% to 70% market cap they covered. So that's, whether we start the full IFRS or not, that depends on when we decide the mandatory base or also already start the voluntary base. But if when we start the mandatory base that for to listed companies for IFRS, but no matter the mandatory base or voluntary base, that as I mentioned, if applied, that 200 to 300, that's good enough, and also the much improvement for the introduction of the IFRS. So that this is dependent when, how big size company should be introduced the IFRS. So that's for the next afternoon session for the IFRS for SMEs.
Yes.
That depends on this this discussion. But not necessarily the full company applied these IFRS to the old companies. So that's I think that importance is the many companies or most leading company introduce IFRS. That's the most important rather than the 100% adoption of the IFRS.
Thank you. We have other presentations that we want to cover in the allotted time, so I'll ask you to keep it brief. Riaz, please.
Just one point, Paula. Publishing in printed version, because lots of these countries are in the process of various stages of adoption, is that you might find the printed copy going out of date very quickly. So that's an issue that, whereas a vibrant website might be a better option. The second point I wanted to say is that, for example, one of the countries that which I represent as well is Bangladesh. They've adopted all, but they have no regulator of repute and only one big four firm. So compliance isn't a big issue. So I'm just wondering whether you asked what other information might be useful. Maybe we could say of these jurisdictions which have an IFIA member regulator. That might be useful information which will give us information about the quality of compliance, because some of these jurisdictions adopt or say that they adopted IFRS, but the compliance is atrocious. So maybe a piece of information to say is of these jurisdictions which have an IFIA member regulator existent.
Jim? Sorry.
I think Ray has said it. I wouldn't print a booklet. Save a tree. Everybody can access the website.
Jeff?
Thank you. Paul, excellent job. It's very impressive. 2 points. One, on your email address, I think that's a great idea about giving the opportunity for individuals to present any corrections or changes. Along those lines, so I don't pick on any country, so I have a person who's an expert in U.S. GAAP and IFRS, and they have a disagreement with the profile, and so they email you and send reasons why they disagree. How would you evaluate whether or not to make a change or not in response to that? Well, my second comment is on additional questions. I very much like the question towards the bottom of page 6 about has your jurisdiction added any accounting standards or any other disclosures that are mandatory for your presentation of financial statements, scribes, forming drivers. I think it's very important from a user perspective, if you can accommodate that question. And along the lines of the quality of compliance issue, I mean, would it be possible, I know this would be kind of difficult and ambitious, but to ask whether there's an area where there's substantial noncompliance with an existing standard in a country and whether you could capture that, because that would also be of great interest to users. So those are my comments, but great, great job, Paul, as always.
Shazan?
Thank you. I think this way is very useful. But I think it will be much more useful if in a future survey you can look into areas such as the main problems, the major difficulties, or what type of assistance needed in adopting IFIs.
Could I just comment on
just
both
very briefly, Paul?
Yes, both of these last couple of comments, because our goal was to report facts. And we, in the foundation, will then figure and try to identify ways to provide the assistance that you've suggested. And as for conflict resolution, again, our goal is to get a fact into our profile on what is IFRS adoption. If there's a fight between two, you know, groups of experts, I mean, it's not a matter of interpreting IFRS. I just want to know, have they adopted or have they tinkered?
This is an important topic, and I'm sure we will come back to it. My sense is when we raised this, we had a vision and short on details, so I think you have more than delivered against the vision. One of the concerns that I recall us expressing was the difficulty of accessing this type of information, and I think we ought not to assume that if it's posted on a website or something that people will know it's there. Efforts are going to have to be made, in my view, to push this information out. Not necessarily a bound volume to do it, but I think it's really important to let people know that this sort of information exists and how it can be accessed. The other marker that I recall us putting down was there are lots of really interesting things that somebody ought to be considering sooner or later. But I think we said, you know, narrow. It's like scope creep. And I think that's what you're alluding to, Paul, is keep it objective. There are lots of other lines of inquiry, some of them perhaps not best dealt with by the IASB, but at least this is a platform that my sense on behalf of council would be to urge you to get this up and running as solid as you can possibly make it. People will always quibble about certain refinements. And then this time next year or some point in the future, we can consider the next vision or extension. Yale, did you want to come in on that?
I just wanted to follow up on this exactly right. I can see how people see what's in it and what they would want also in it. And I could tell you how many discussions internally we had, Paul and myself and the team, on what seems to you as factual now. So many issues were challenging, needed a lot of internal discussion and a lot of iteration with the other parties. So I agree that we try to keep it as factual as possible and less qualitative as possible. So, and I think it would be a problem for us to make opinions on level of application and level of enforcement, which are issues that are very, very controversial and at times very political. So I agree with the direction you set, Paul, to try to meet the initial challenge, which is enough challenging, I can assure you, and with the 74 more countries, let's do the first circle and then relax, take a deep breath and see where we go next.
People usually tell me to do about most topics. Well, thank you for that, Paul. Perhaps we should turn next to Karen. It doesn't matter. Sorry, I may have the sequence wrong. Do you want to follow up on the surf, or then we'll conclude with Shenhong on Korea? So.
Thanks, Paul. I didn't prepare either an agenda paper or a set of slides for this particular part of the meeting because the report itself is still in draft, and I didn't want to presuppose any of the conclusions that might be in it. So you'll just have to bear with me and listen to me talk for a few minutes. So in 2012, the Canadian Financial Executives Research Foundation, which is the research arm of Financial Executives Institute Canada, I will talk about those in acronyms hereafter, along with Canada's Accounting Standards Oversight Committee and the IFRS Foundation, undertook a study on the cost of the IFRS changeover in Canada. Canada changed over to IFRS on January 1st, 2011, and the SEC had raised in its, and I'll get the name of the document wrong, but its work plan as cost being one of the reasons for perhaps seeking to delay adoption of IFRS in the U.S. So a few of us thought it would be a good idea if we could undertake this study under the auspices of CFIRF to gather some information. As I mentioned, the study is now in the final drafting stages, but I am happy to share some of the findings at a high level. First, a little bit on the process to get data. We elected to use an online survey, similar to what Paul has done to collect his information, of both FEI Canada members plus other preparers across the country, and we did this in January of 2013. We had 105 people respond, which I thought was pretty decent, and we also had a roundtable in February 2013 just to gather some qualitative input around what happened as part of the changeover. And 14 preparers attended that roundtable, all of whom were responsible for the changeover in their organizations. Key findings, a lot of them not very surprising. I should say first that in Canada, all publicly accountable enterprises have to apply IFRS. We have a marketplace of listed companies that, and Paul, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there are about 8,000 listed companies, of which about 6,000 trade on what we call the venture exchange. So they are startups, venture capitals, junior resource companies, because we're very much a resource-based and mining environment in Canada. So large corporations manage the complexity of the task by planning early and devoting resources. I don't think there's any big surprises there. Many small companies did not find the task arduous, and that did surprise me a little bit, because it was the smaller companies we were worried about when we said that IFRS applied equally to every publicly traded or publicly accountable entity in the country. The cost to implement was less than 0.05% of revenues, in some cases as low as 0.01%, depended on company size, but implementation costs were not significant. If we looked at the cost drivers of the implementation, they included things like more issues than anticipated, so more differences between Canadian GAAP than IFRS. One of my pet peeves, resolving differing technical interpretations of IFRS. So that's the big four firms having different views. And for example, we used one firm as subject matter experts, which were different from our auditors. And there were certain cases in which they had different views on how we should apply the standards. So that drove time and money, getting those things resolved. Need for external subject matter experts and the general increase in disclosures across the board in annual financial statements. There were views that these costs were controlled by hiring externally to bring IFRS knowledge in-house. So a number of companies went out actually across the world to try to bring IFRS experts into their organizations. Training up internal teams. So if you were using an internal team of people, you would just give them some pretty intensive IFRS training. And a small group of respondents identified fewer issues than anticipated. And I think, again, that was largely in the smaller company sphere. In terms of recurring costs, because we did want a sense of not only what did the cost of the changeover, or what was the cost of the changeover, but did anybody see a difference in costs on a recurring basis? Again, interesting result. About half the companies said costs were the same. Another large proportion, mostly small and medium-sized companies, said costs are higher. and the cross-listed companies, so we have a number of companies who trade in the U.S. as well as in Canada, said their costs overall had decreased because of the elimination of the U.S. GAAP rec, which we previously had to prepare if we were a U.S.-listed company. So I think a pretty favorable outcome in terms of costs and benefits and extent of effort that was needed to do the changeover, and as I say, fairly recent evidence. So the report itself is in for comments, final comments, fatal flaw reviews, things like that. So I would hope I will be able to ship over enough copies for everyone on this council for the October meeting in advance of the meeting. Happy to take questions if there are any.
Thanks, Karen. Any quick comments or questions? Charles?
Karen, given that in Canada it was your own companies that basically drove the decision to adopt IFRS rather than move to US GAAP, was there any qualitative element in the study to indicate whether, having now implemented that decision, whether it has met their expectations?
I think a mixed view. Some companies that are international in scope would say it's been helpful because they're no longer using multiple gaps. I think, so again, a bit of history. In Canada, we talked for a long, long time about converging with US GAAP as opposed to IFRS and changed that view when the SEC said they would look at accepting US GAAP as a set of accounting principles when you did your company filings. So that's when we sort of changed our view, both the accounting standard setters and, I think, the companies themselves. So the elimination of the U.S. GAAP rec has been a big advantage because there was never anything to balance to when you did that. Always made me a tad nervous. But I think generally It was such a new, I don't know, Charles, it was a really neutral event in Canada. I mean, no impact on the markets, no reaction from the analyst community. It was almost like a nothing. We had ourselves all, well, the accountants had themselves all geared up for a big event, and it was a non-event.
But essentially Canadian. Don't want to compress. We're running a little late, but Shenhong, please take time if we could turn to you and invite your comments on the paper that Korea has prepared.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. Before I make an address, I'd like to spend 30 seconds to make a comment what we discussed just before the lunch. Well, I just want one thing. When the non-listed companies in Korea, if non-listed company apply for the listing, then it takes more than 2 years to be listed, and in the meantime, they have to apply IFRS for their annual disclosure, which means I'm trying to say that the comparing the financial statements between non-listed but trying to be listed and already listed companies has no problem. Okay. Well, I think the current remarks was more valuable than which I prepared. Violet made the paper, and then my address is just a kind of summary of this, quite dry. Well, thank you very much for me to have the opportunity to share with you the report released by the KSB on on Korea's IFRS adoption and the lessons we learned. The report outlines the history of Korea's adoption of IFRS, the steps undertaken in preparation for and during the transition to IFRS, and recommendations for other countries considering adopting IFRS. So today, I would like to deliver a short summary of the report. Korea adopted IFRS in full in 2011 in an effort to improve international investors' perception of the transparency of financial statements provided by Korean entities. The adoption was also to demonstrate Korea's strong will to take part in the international movement towards a single set of high-quality global accounting standards. At the adoption, as the adoption required a major overhaul of Korea's accounting system, the government took the greatest care it could in deciding on the adoption. Korea chose to employ a Big Bang approach in adopting full IFRS instead of taking the phased-in or convergence approach. And the single-tier accounting system of Korea was switched to a two-tier accounting system. Korea went through two full years of in-depth discussions and coordination works with a broad spectrum of stakeholders before it made its official decision to adopt IFRS. During the two-year period, the Korean government organized the IFRS Adoption Task Force to assess the appropriateness of adoption and prepared a roadmap. In the process of discussing the adoption of IFRS, it was extremely important to make policy decisions on issues such as the manner in which IFRS will be adopted, the length of preparation period, the extent of the scope of application, and etc. Once the adoption was decided, the government took the necessary measures to amend the accounting infrastructure, including the related laws and regulations, and utilized various task forces to facilitate the process. Despite the immense efforts of Korea in the adoption process, constituents in Korea encountered numerous challenges and difficulties in adapting to the new accounting standards. As with any case of adopting a new system, difficulties unavoidably arise in the earlier stages of adoption process. Thus, the hardship faced by the Korean constituents was almost predetermined. So, Korea devoted diverse efforts and employed various methods to overcome such difficulties. The KASB founded committees of experts to seek appropriate solutions. We raised related issues at various international conferences and submitted its comments to the ISB or IFRSIC when deemed necessary. Moreover, the KASB employed multidimensional channels to improve the general perception of IFRS in Korea. For example, the KASB carried out on- and offline education sessions and held numerous seminars and conferences to improve the understanding of IFRS and emphasized the need to adopt IFRS. In the process, Mr. Wayne Upton, Director of International Activities and Chairman of IFRSIC, visited Korea many times, holding roundtable sessions and IFRS seminars to help Korean constituents with IFRS issues. Based on such diverse efforts, Korea now expects to see improved perception of the reliability of financial statements prepared by Korean entities and enhanced status of Korea in the international accounting community. These are lessons we learned. The IFRS adoption process in Korea was rather a bumpy ride. But while trying to overcome the stumbling blocks, Korea realized that the followings are essential in promoting successful implementation of IFRS in any country. Firstly, invigorating discussions about IFRS among constituents at home and abroad. Secondly, preventing the psychological stress of stakeholders from getting exaggerated by providing sufficient education and promotion of IFRS. And finally, receiving more robust support from the IFRS Foundation. As you are all aware, a new financial reporting language would be implemented smoothly only when it is accompanied by the unwavering will of the adopting country, reorganization of the related systems, and strong support from the foundation. Korea would like to share its experiences from the IFRS adoption and hopes that our report could be of help to those countries considering, planning, or at an early stage of IFRS adoption. I also hope that our report would give some useful and practical guidance to the IFRS Foundation and ISB in promoting the global proliferation of IFRS. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chen Hong. Any questions of Chen Hong? Wego?
Ms. Kim just mentioned the approach taken by Korea is Big Bang. It is understandable. And I tried to link to Karen's general observation about the Canadians' experience. She tried to say it's very smooth, no significant impact on the market. It is also understandable. For the country like Canada, or Australia, and other traditional, English-speaking countries, it's, of course, Canada also have French part. It's understandable. And but there is one big question. Actually, we discussed last week in Hong Kong at the Regional Policy Forum. For these countries, whether IFRS 1 is also be the must, or it is not necessary. I'm not sure Karen's explanation about no impact is that Canadian company have already experienced big efforts to transit by throwing very thorough process of IFRS 1, but market not react so actively. Tentatively, even they did so, the effort is minor one. Therefore, it may not necessary for the whole world, for IFSB, or for any other countries to emphasize you must go through the process.
Take a crack at responding in terms of Canada. First of all, IFRS 1 was a major help in facilitating the transition. I think most companies took advantage of certain aspects of it, and without it would not have played out nearly as well. I would also caution you, though, when you're looking at the Canadian experience, each jurisdiction has a different history. Our history in Canada was that for the previous 10 years, the Canadian board had a formal policy of converging with IAS as it then was. So, for example, all the bitter wars about financial instruments were largely behind us because we already had the equivalent of IAS 32. And there were a few major steps in the evolution of financial reporting that we had already absorbed into our system. For other countries, if you're not in that situation, clearly that would have been a significant complication. So we did have many years of getting closer. And what finally the business community said was there's no point in being mostly converged. We want to adopt. Do you agree with that?
Just add perhaps one thing to that. I think I heard smooth being equated a little bit to didn't take much effort. And I would not want to leave that impression behind because it went smoothly, but it was a huge amount of effort. Where I work and for most large companies in Canada, it was a 2.5 to 3 year exercise with fairly significant project teams attached to them, and that's part of the reason it was smooth. We had lots of notice, and we did a lot of planning, but there was a huge amount of effort and a reasonable amount of cost attached to it.
If I could say, Paul, in my observation in terms of the transition across particularly the emerging markets, it has also a lot to do with the visible commitment at the government level. And I found a lot of the sticking blocks happen to be in tax authorities who say, well, we don't want to lose income at this point. We're not changing our rules and regulations. So that's one thing, the visible commitment from the government to change. But the second thing that I think impacts the transition is the depth of professional skill and knowledge within the accounting community at the time. It really has an impact on their capacity to move from one to another.
All right. Well, I think we need to move on. Certainly, Shanong, I would congratulate Korea. Thank you for the effort of pulling that story together. You know, I've read the paper several times. I think there are excellent tips in there that lessons learned and you know, which would help any other country, I think, that's considering similar sorts of changes. You know, obviously, there'll be variations on a theme, but it is worth the effort, and I'm sure it was a large effort to pull that paper together. It was very well done. All right. Well, we're slightly behind schedule, but not in serious jeopardy yet. Could be the kiss of death. Are we ready to move on to the conceptual framework?